Welcome to the Curious Performer Podcast, the podcast for performers who want to grow. Are you ready? Ready to improve your show, to grow your business? Are you ready to build your brand? Then turn up the volume and get ready to hear from some of the best performers in the business. I'm your host, Keith Tussing, and I'll be asking the questions we're all curious about. And welcome to The Curious Performer. I'm so excited about today's guest. She brings a plethora of skills to the table that include unicycling, juggling, clown dance, physical theater, and illusion. She has performed on stages from Dubai to France, and she has worked with clients such as DreamWorks, Google, and Netflix. We are so excited to have Bree Crabtree here all the way from sunny California. Welcome to the show, Bree.
Hi, Keith. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, thank you so much for taking the time. And we're going to have a little bit of fun. I don't know Bree. She doesn't know me. We just met. So we're going to find out all we can about her in the next 30 minutes. So Bree, tell us a little bit about how did you get involved in performing?
I got started as a teenager. I started doing magic, juggling, face painting, balloon animals all at once. And my mom totally encouraged it and got me books on these things. She connected me with other people who were doing these things. And the real solidifying factor was I discovered juggling. I was practicing on my own in the backyard. And then my mom noticed a flyer one day posted in her workplace, and there was a girl starting a clown troupe. And it was for the Girl Scouts. It was her Gold Award project. And so I joined the clown troupe, and we would go to hospitals and visit patients and bring some joy and laughter to their life for a little bit. So that was my real launching point with getting into entertaining and learning skills from professionals, was joining this clown troupe that a Girl Scout started. And she's the one who brought in people to teach us skills. And I got connected with a professional juggler, and I ended up taking juggling lessons once a week from Roy Melanson. And when I found out about the juggling community, I was off to the races in terms of my creativity and imagination and skill building. And I really connected with juggling. So that's what I focused on in the beginning.
In the beginning. So juggling was kind of your entry point, your focal point. And then that's still a huge part of what you do, right?
Yeah. Well, now at this point, I am performing the Silly Circus Show. And I would say that, you know, 60% of the show is based on clowning.
Okay.
It's based on my character and silly antics. And I love to go on little tangents. I love improv, audience participation, working off the crowd, working off the environment. Of course, the show is scripted and there's a show order and everything, but then I would say I use magic and juggling and mime and all these other skills to enhance my character and the show.
Okay. How would you describe your character?
That depends on who I'm performing for. Well, yes, ultimately I have the same core character, but if I'm performing for young children, I'm a little bit clueless and I'm clumsy and I like to explore. I'm curious. I like to play. And really play is a core concept throughout all of the shows that I have. And then I have a street show, that I was performing at Pier 39. And that character is very playful, but a little more brazen and a little more arrogant, I would say, especially since I'm performing out on the street. I like to present more of a stronger character or stronger personality.
Sure. And you said clumsy and juggling don't go together very well. Tell me how that works in your show.
You know, it's hard to be a clumsy juggler. It's hard to make it look like an accident sometimes. Well, you know, I go by a lot of Avner's philosophy, where there's the clown in trouble and you have a task to perform, but along the way, 10 other things happen, which through my character happens maybe through clumsiness and then having to solve a problem.
Okay. Okay. And when you juggle, what is your favorite objects to juggle?
I love hat juggling.
Hats. Okay. Mm-hmm.
I got totally obsessed with hat juggling, oh, probably 9 years ago. And I went to Europe to go to some juggling festivals and learn from all the hat jugglers in Europe and to buy and to purchase hats. It's kind of hard to find juggling hats here that are the correct size for my head. I went to France to buy juggling hats just for my head. I also love juggling clubs.
Juggling clubs. I have a son that juggles just for the fun of it, and he likes to juggle hammers. He actually got in trouble at school. They shot a video in the workshop at school, and that didn't go over real well.
Oh, yeah, I can see that. That's too bad when somebody knows what they're doing, and if they're doing it safely, which I'm assuming your son was.
Well, I don't know, you know, how a 17-year-old can be. Safety's not high on their list. Okay, now, you said go to Europe. You know, one of the things I really find about Europe and the arts is there seems to be a lot broader presentation of different things like hat juggling or bubbles. You know, there's a bigger, it's everywhere, more so than here, mm-hmm. it seems
it's
like.
More pervasive. I think the variety art, and especially clowning, are just more accepted in the European culture and respected among the mainstream people. I think that their cities and their government really expose people to the arts and provide all sorts of free festivals to their communities. And I mean, that happens here in the United States too, but it's not as funded as much as some of what I've seen in Europe. And when I went, I was specifically going to juggling festivals. That's what I was doing.
Right. Well, and I've recently got into bubbling and doing bubbles and find that so few people do that here. But it's just, like you said, the word pervasive in Europe, it's everywhere. And actually to get mm-hmm. any tools to do bubbles, you almost have to go to Europe to actually get professional tools, Europe or mm-hmm. Russia.
That's funny. I purchased the Bubble University over the summer because I also have wanted to. I've always been fascinated by the bubble structures, like Tom Noddy style. Mm-hmm. And I played around with that with a little bit. Mostly I wanted the secret recipe.
Yeah, they can be very protective of those. Definitely, definitely.
But I've been doing during, you know, the pandemic, I will go to the park and do big bubbles just for fun. You know, it's a little bit of interaction, you know, socially distant style. But that has brought me some joy over the summer is I would have never done big bubbles in a park before the pandemic. Like I probably wouldn't have.
Really? When we first started doing that, that's exactly what I did. I took bubbles out to the park and we had a beautiful park very close to us and it just draws people in. It was amazing to me. I didn't even know what I was doing and people wanted to come see what we were doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I say I wouldn't have done it because I didn't know how cool bubbles were until I opened my mind and I was like, okay, I'm going to just try it. And, if I go back to street performing, I will do big bubbles to draw a crowd for sure. That's a no brainer.
Yeah. It's amazing how, regardless of age, everybody's interested. Everybody wants to participate. They want to make the bubbles. So as you talk about that and the skills that you use in your, you call it a circus show, right?
The Silly Circus Show.
The Silly Circus Show. Right. So you take all of those elements and combine them together. What about early struggles? Maybe a story about when you first were getting involved in doing these bigger shows on your own.
Yeah, I went through your questions. I can't think of. Most of my struggles have been street performing, which is not a children's audience, and it's not in a controlled environment. So most of my struggles in the performance world have been at Pier 39, where you're on a very windy stage, and you can't control the weather, and my strongest skill is juggling, and it just doesn't mix very well. And it's very, very difficult to capture people's attention as they're walking by and convince them that you have something great to share with them. You know, I've done shows for one person, two people. I've tried to do shows and couldn't execute a show. That's the hardest thing I've gone through as a performer, but it also has made me stronger. I've learned so many, I guess, techniques from street performing, and it's made me a way better children's entertainer, definitely, with crowd control and arranging a space and setting up a space.
Yeah, and street performing anywhere is hard. I mean, it just, by its very nature, it can be difficult, and drawing a crowd and getting them to pay attention long enough to understand, hey, if I don't stay, I'm going to miss something.
I know, asking for money. The skill of asking for money is huge. And once I got confident enough to do that to strangers on the street, my own prices increased, and what I started asking for also increased. So I think that's something that really empowered me was, wow, I can do this with strangers. If people already want what I'm selling, I should be asking more. So that was a real confidence booster, learning that.
That's great. And I think that's something that especially initially everybody struggles with is, how much am I actually worth? And what is somebody willing to pay for the service?
Yeah. Yeah, so, that's an ongoing question. I don't know if that ever ends for me.
Well, I think, it's one that we all struggle through. And especially now with there's so much that we can't go and do, it really changes that perspective a little bit of, you know, sitting in my house and not doing anything or going out and doing something for something. So if somebody were just starting out, what kind of advice would you give them if somebody were to come up to you and say, Bree, you know, I'm really interested in being a performer. Where should I start? What should I do?
Yeah, I would say perform as much as you can. And, for friends, for family, informally, occasionally, you know, when I was starting out, I would perform for strangers, maybe in a coffee shop or like in line at the grocery store. It's really helped me within my inhibitions. I'm more outgoing now that I am a performer. I was very shy when I started out. And so I would say just practice as much as you can and get any kind of audience that you can and participate in small shows. That's my biggest piece of advice, because the more you do it, the better you get.
Sure, sure. Now, you said you're very shy. Do you consider yourself an introvert or an extrovert?
I have both sides of that. And, you know, when I was growing up as a kid, I was an only child. I was much more of an introvert. But if I get excited about something or if I get a whim, I can turn on a dime and be very outgoing and extroverted. And now that I really do think that performing is some sort of weird self-help thing in a way for me, because I've learned to control that more too, and, or get in that mind frame.
Yeah. I think that, you know, a lot of performers start out as being maybe a little bit introverted, but grow out of that or grow into being able to step out on the stage and, you know, perform. And then that also helps with your personality as you mature as a performer. It kind of changes the way you interact with others all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And gosh, I've been juggling and unicycling for 20 years and performing for maybe 10 years. So it really has been a lifelong thing for me. Like, I love it. And I like how there's so many facets where you can grow with it.
What about branding? You know, you call it the Silly Circus, and I've seen some of your photographs. How important is that to what you do, and how would you describe your brand?
I think branding is important, especially if you're going to enter a market and you want business. So the Silly Circus Show is a name I came up with very early on, and I didn't know what I was doing. And I honestly picked it because I thought it sounded good. And what I am doing is a variety show magic, juggling, unicycling. And I would say a lot of those skills maybe fall more into the circus category. I mean, to be honest, my branding, it could be stronger. I could have a circus tent with stripes, but I chose not to go that route, maybe so I could change and grow. But it is called a silly circus show because life is a circus. You don't know what's going to happen, which is kind of like many shows.
I would agree with that. What about social media? Is that something you use? Is it something that you are proactive in?
Yeah, social media has a lot of different facets to it. And I use it for a lot of different reasons. So, you know, where is your audience? Who is your audience? Where do you want business? Are those people, which social media platforms are those people on? Who do you want to reach? I use Facebook to connect in a more informal way with other people interested in what I'm doing. So other jugglers, kids entertainers, magicians. I use Instagram in that same way. And I use those platforms if I like, I don't want something from people, but if I do, I will promote the things I sell on Facebook and Instagram. So I have had success using social media channels to sell juggling stickers. I am totally addicted to commissioning artists to create juggling art. And so I have a website where I sell stickers and greeting cards featuring juggling props. I don't get kid shows from Facebook or Instagram, but I would say it's important to focus on some social media presence. I do like how you can build a portfolio on Instagram. There are birthday party clients checking Instagram and checking you out. And I think LinkedIn is another important social media platform that's quite overlooked, but I do enjoy LinkedIn.
We use social media in a lot of different ways ourselves. Facebook, I think our target audience is primarily on Facebook. Younger people tend to hit toward Instagram and things like that. And the pictures that we post on Instagram can be very helpful just to anybody flipping through and finding something a little unique.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like this little resume for the people who are on Instagram. So, oh, and TikTok. I started doing TikTok.
How do you like TikTok?
TikTok? Well, I'm kind of mad at TikTok right now because I did post a video that started getting, gosh, it got like 10,000 views or likes or whatever within a day.
Wow.
But I was holding a juggling knife and they took it down. They censored me. And I'm mad because there's tons of videos of other jugglers juggling knives. And all I'm doing is holding the knife and I pretend to cut my ponytail off. So I used to have a gag in the show where I'm swinging this knife and then I accidentally cut my ponytail off, which is just a hair extension. And it flies off my head into the audience. It was such a great moment to capture. It was at a live show and the hair piece flew into the audience and I didn't expect it to do that. And I personally freaked out and then they threw it back to me and I had a little moment with it. But TikTok took it down because it violated their community guidelines of portraying dangerous objects.
Oh my goodness. That is too bad. I have actually seen that video and it is hilarious.
Yeah. So it's still up on Facebook and Instagram, but maybe TikTok's just better at regulating. I don't know. But there are people juggling knives on there. So I'm mad at TikTok right now. I was like, man, I got TikTok famous and then it got taken away.
Oh, no. That's terrible. Terrible. Okay. What would you say to another performer is the critical element of success?
Well, yeah. First, you have to define your own definition of success and what your goals are. I find success when I have a kid show that I know makes me happy and it makes the audience happy, and getting that interaction and the laughs from an audience is a definition of success. And then, you know, another definition of success that I have instated for myself is, can I make a living doing this? Can this be my full-time job? And yes, it can. Can I earn a savings? Yes, I can. And then another version of success is, does it stay interesting? Can I still be creative? Can I still stay curious? And yes, I can. And that's why I've chosen this career of children's entertainment, because I've never had another job that can offer me all those areas of growth and success.
That's good. That's good. Who would you point to as a performer that we should all know? Somebody we should be aware of?
I feel like my answer, everybody might already know about. Avner the Eccentric has been instrumental in my understanding of what clowning is. I have my own personal favorites here in the Bay Area that people might not know about. Circus of Smiles, Unique Derek, and oh, Figmentally. These are all three people that I'm sure nobody's ever heard about, at least in this community, because these other performers are not connecting with the children's entertainment community. But I think that those three are some of the best performers in the Bay Area. So once again, that's Unique Derek, Figmentally, and Circus of Smiles.
Okay, well, I will definitely have to check those out because I don't know any of those. So that great tip, we'll be looking into that. What about your clients? As you develop your business, how do you develop a rapport with your client?
Well, keeping in contact with them, emails, newsletters, tagging them on social media. I have found that mostly in the last two years, all of a sudden, like, libraries are super interested in being on social media and other people that I haven't seen there before. So that's another way that you can use social media in your business is to constantly tag the partners you're working with. How else do I keep in contact with people? You know, occasionally if I'm in the area, I'll just stop by a library and say hi or wherever. Cards. I've sent cards before, around the holidays, phone calls, you know, sometimes I'll just call somebody up. I'm pretty informal about it, but I do it. I do keep in contact with people.
Yeah. And I found when I first started that actually physically going into the library and meeting the librarian was huge just to get mm-hmm. the door open. And actually had a couple say, you know, I've never had anybody do that. Just walk in and say hi and mm-hmm. just for the fun of it. So we've kind of kept doing that even still, as we know most of the ones in our area, like you said, in an informal way, just popping in and saying hi. It seems to make a huge difference. What about continuing education? You mentioned going to Europe to learn the hat juggling.
I've just always been naturally attracted to these variety arts because I love more obscure and quirky ideas and forms of entertainment. I've started to broaden my horizon, though, of what I think is relevant to me. And right now I'm really into the concept of play and using play to learn about yourself, others, and the environment around you. And there's a whole philosophy on integrating play into the school place as well. So right now, I actually have my books here. My current continuing education, I'm reading Playful Parenting. And it's actually a book for parents. But it's like techniques on how to interact with children in a playful way. And it has a lot about power dynamics and power relationships. So I find that really interesting. One book I always go back to over and over again is How to Be a Complete Clown by Toby Sanders. I don't know how popular or I don't know how well read this book is in this community, but it literally breaks down humor into, gosh, I don't know, like 22 different ways to be humorous. And I find lists like that very, very helpful for when I'm trying to generate content. And it just has a lot of great, useful, it's got acts, gags, routines, tricks, spanning from magic, juggling, silly antics. Look, there's even a little bit about balloons. So this is a book I will often reference when I'm feeling like I need to get some new inspiration. And that's what I'm currently doing for my continuing education.
I love that you read. That's, I think, a lost art. We don't understand the value of just continually to be reading something. Even if it's outside of the arts, if it's business or just self-help, being a reader is huge to me.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So what about, as we get ready to close, would you say, are the top three things to becoming a successful performer?
Ooh, the top three. So once again, yes, what's your definition of success? But ultimately, I think for most people, that's to be happy and satisfied with their life and achieving their goals. So the top three things is to be interested in what you're doing and actually feel excited about what you're working on. And the second thing is to just put in the time to have a quality show and a quality business structure. I've taken several business classes, and that really helped form a backbone for me for what I'm doing. And I would say consulting with other people and asking other people for help. I think that you're always going to need guidance and help no matter what you're doing. And there's always somebody better than you doing it. And you might as well ask them their opinion.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. Ask questions. I think that sometimes we're afraid to ask the questions when we're not sure about things, and finding someone that we are willing to open up to and say, hey, I'm struggling with this, or can you help me with that? Huge, huge to be willing to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Bree, we're coming to a close, and I so appreciate you taking the time today to be here and hang out with us. And I want you to know that I'm going to keep following you more now that I know a little bit about you. And I will definitely, definitely encourage everyone to check out the three artists that Bree mentioned today. And we're so glad that you took the time to be here with us.
Yeah, thanks so much, Keith. I'm excited about your podcast and to listen to the episodes.
Tune in, everyone, as we're going to launch in just a little bit. And you do not want to miss one episode of all these incredible performers. Thanks a lot, Bree. If you like what you've been hearing on this podcast, I invite you to go wherever you're listening to this episode and leave us a comment or review. Tell me what you love about this episode, or better yet, tell me what you want to hear more of in the future.